Now, activist and author Gloria Steinem was in Wisconsin recently for the 80th anniversary of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. She talked about reproductive rights as an extension of human rights at a Milwaukee event that drew 1,300 supporters.
Since Steinem's event, the political landscape and its relation to reproductive rights has changed dramatically with the election of Donald Trump. Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence are opponents of abortion, and some anti-abortion activists are hoping, advocates are hoping the new Republican leadership will ultimately overturn the Roe versus Wade ruling.
Gloria Steinem joins us now. She's a writer, lecturer, editor, and feminist activist. In 1972, she co-founded Ms. Magazine. Her books include Revolution from Within and My Life on the Road. Gloria, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, some advocates of reproductive rights are concerned about what a Trump presidency could mean. Are you concerned about that future right now?
Yes, I'm very concerned. I don't know anyone who is not concerned because he has made it semi-clear, at least, that he thinks that women, for instance, who need an abortion, which means one in three American women at some time in their lives, that they should be subject to punishment in some way. And there is the whole question, of course, of funding for Planned Parenthood. There is the question of contraception as part of medical plans. So it would be difficult to think of reasons for more concern, including his vice president, Pence, who has been ferociously anti-women's decision-making over our own reproductive life.
And the most obvious issue when we talk about reproductive rights is abortion, but you mentioned some others. Are there other aspects of this that you think are also something that supporters of reproductive rights should be worried about right now?
Yes, all the discussions that we have had about contraception under Obamacare, for instance, could now be everything we fought for there might be reversed as well. And there's also the question of funding for Planned Parenthood in general, and the fact that its functions have only 1% to do with abortion seems quite lost on its adversaries. So I think we're all on high alert.
And what do you anticipate in terms of sort of the opening volleys in terms of reproductive rights? Do you expect this to be a front of the pack issue, or do you think this is something that will come up more slowly?
You know, it's difficult to know, isn't it? Because we are in uncharted territory. We have never had before a president with so little experience, with no political experience, with no governing experience, and with so little knowledge. I mean, when asked about Roe v. Wade, he just said, well, you know, after it's overturned, women can go to some other state. He himself, I think, doesn't know that his supporters, or he may not know that his supporters want a human life amendment in the Constitution, which would declare the fertilized egg to be a person. So it would essentially nationalize women's bodies throughout our childbearing years. That's the stated goal of his supporters. I think he does not know that. I'm not sure that he has any belief other than what is helpful to him at the moment, but the people around him clearly are, for the most part, anti-reproductive freedom.
This was a super highly charged election for both sides, and in the end, some voters chose Donald Trump because they were single-issue voters and they wanted to see Roe v. Wade overturned. What do you make of the fact that decades after Roe v. Wade was passed, abortion remains a force for a segment of voters today?
Well, I think that the whole question of, every hierarchy seems to begin with controlling reproduction and therefore controlling women. And every democracy seems to begin with the understanding that we, each of us, as human beings, get to govern our own bodies. That is, the power of the state stops at our skins. So it is very, very fundamental. And controlling women in order to control reproduction it means there is dominance and violence towards women in much of the world, so much so that now when you add up all the forms of violence against women, there are actually fewer women on earth, fewer females on earth than there are males. So it is not surprising that people with a hierarchical worldview start with this issue.
We're talking with Gloria Steinem right now. She's a writer, a lecturer, editor, and feminist activist. And Gloria, you've been, as we said, an activist for years during the era that gave us Roe versus Wade, for instance. How would you compare what you can make out of the coming Trump era, maybe to some of what reproductive rights activists have been through in the past?
You know, I do not, and I think most Americans will not, live in the Trump era. I think that he is not representative, if you look at the public opinion polls, of majority opinions in this country in almost any of the positions that he has taken. I think what we are seeing is a backlash against the progress that has been made and the majority issues, that the majority views that are held by most Americans. What is a first in history is to have someone with so little experience and so much willingness to go against the majority opinion because he was elected by a backlash, and that's what's dangerous. However, I do see that people in other parts of the world have handled this in various ways, and we can too. For instance, in Poland recently, where there was a very great effort to completely outlaw abortion and to make the already strict laws about it much worse, 6 million women turned out in the street. 6 million. Is that not an incredible number? And the government was forced to change. So what we have here is a kind of massive popular opinion against the opinion, the apparent opinion of the chief of state, and we will use our numbers to make sure we keep reproductive freedom as a fundamental human right.
Well, there is the chief of state, but then there's also Congress, and Republicans control both chambers of the legislature and the White House. As you said, does that make this
difficult fight? Much more difficult, but. And makes many more things possible from the top down. But we must remember that we live life from the bottom up. And we are a democracy, and there are many ways in which unpopular wars or deprivation of voting power by citizens, you know, democratic rights, have been rebelled against, and we are going to rebel. I mean, we are not going to live in the era of Trump.
The country is hyper-polarized right now. For activists who may care about everything from immigration to Wall Street reform to reproductive rights, do you think it might be hard to fight a battle on so many fronts?
It's very difficult to have a profoundly unrepresentative president, but you already see that, for instance, the cities who have declared themselves sanctuaries for undocumented immigrants, New York, for instance, and our mayor, have already declared themselves to be ready to keep what they view as democracy and to keep faith with their neighbors, regardless of what the president does. We're in uncharted territory. We've never had a president who is so distant from the majority views of the country. He really won by being well known in the media without knowledge of what his actual views were on many, many issues. And as a backlash against Washington. In other words, many people who were impatient, understandably, with what happened in Washington, or suffering economically, voted for change for the sake of change without knowing what was in the change to come. But we are still the majority. We still have all of our peaceful powers to use. For instance, the question of defunding Planned Parenthood is very much alive, even though, you know, a tiny percentage of what they do is abortion. Nonetheless, there is a great wish on the part of the ultra-right wing to defund them. We could take a certain amount of money, you know, wouldn't be much, out of our income tax. This happened during the Vietnam War, for instance. People took the portion of their tax that was going towards the Vietnam War, didn't pay it, put a letter in with their tax return and said, hello, I'm not paying this part of my tax. It's a way of voting against the war. We could do that with Planned Parenthood even more helpfully, because we could send the money to Planned Parenthood and then just put a note in with our IRS forms saying we've deducted this amount. The government is able to take it out of your bank account, but it costs way more to take it out of your bank account and go through that process than the government gets by collecting that money. So it becomes a form of voting. There are all kinds of things that we can do from the bottom up.
I want to close by asking you about feminism and that term feminism. Where are we with the feminist movement today, and is it, do you think, still an active force, not just for women of older generations, but for young women?
Yes, it is. It is more than ever before. I mean, the millennials are way, way, way more feminist by every measure than my generation or than most previous generations. So this is a backlash. This is not the majority. All the issues of social justice that we think of do have the majority in public opinion polls. So, you know, partly this is the result of a low voting rate. It's the result of a lack of information and just voting for change for the sake of change, but it doesn't represent most Americans.
Gloria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Gloria Steinem is a writer, lecturer, editor, and feminist activist. In 1972, she co-founded Ms. Magazine, and she joined us there to talk about the future of reproductive rights in the new Republican-led federal government.